And I am Reggie. And this is R&B Talks. What's up, Reg?
Yo.
You doing okay, buddy? Reg just fed me delicious spaghetti his wife made an amazing sauce. I am full of spaghetti and joy.
Saucy.
Very saucy spaghetti and joy. You know.
Like, for me, dude, I'm probably like... So I've had like real Italian sauces, you know, which are great, but I kind of prefer like the old American Southern style,
a thicker sauce,
thicker and like spicier, like,
because real Italian, you know, sauces are good, but they're very thin.
It's a much different consistency.
Yeah. Much more tomatoey. But it leans much more on the flavor of the tomato, the different types of tomatoes.
But it's good. I mean,
it's
good. Some of it's really good. But,
yeah,
when I lived up in the Boston area for a while, there was like the north end of that. Man, you could find some so good.
St. Louis has got some really good Italian joints, too.
Of course, New York does.
Yeah.
Been to several New York places.
Something really I did not know is that St. Louis has a very rich mob history.
Oh, yeah, they do.
Very rich mob history. Not that that's important at all. Just struck me, right? A factoid for the folks.
Here's another one.
Okay.
I tell you, Brian. So I've been looking at, because I'm like axe crazy right now because I've been, I don't know. I'm digging so much on the whole splitting and doing stuff like that to keep me physically active. I'm like kind of just axe nuts.
Dude, I called you the other night and you were looking at axes online.
Yeah.
Like I'm
I really was. And so the problem, but here's what I started to think about too was like, I'm sitting here watching like these guys on YouTube and stuff, and they're talking about this axe and what it does and everything. Can I just say that, man, sometimes you just have to just turn it off and don't pay attention to what anybody says.
Yeah.
Cause there's so many people that give you bad advice.
Well, the problem is what it comes down to is preference. And your preference and my preference may not be the same, even though my preference may be relevant in the quality of what it is as opposed to what my preference is. It may have no quality as opposed to your preference, right? So that's where a lot of I don't think it's necessarily bad information. It's just what suits me ain't going to suit you every time.
Because here's where I'm going with this, like especially with an axe, a tool like an axe.
Yes.
It very much depends on your grip. The size of your hand, how you swing, how hard you swing, what you're doing with it. What wood you're using. I mean, all these things. Like, you could fill up a shed with axes for different purposes.
You could.
You know? And so I mean, it's just like, you don't have to know all that stuff. There's like basic things that you need to know in order, like, but really it's going to come down to you figuring out what your preference is. And unfortunately, unless you go pick up one and put it in some wood, you're not going to know. You're not going to know. And,
unless you chop things,
even
going to work out.
I don't do a lot of felling trees with an axe, but I have a felling axe just because I thought everybody should have an axe that can fell a tree.
I don't have a
felling axe. I know. I have two of them. I have an Agdor and I have an Adler Yankee axe. I love
Agdor.
Love the Adler. The Adler axe is phenomenal. It is just such a cool.
So is the Agdor just not where it's at?
No, it's a really nice. It's just smaller. It's my thing with it. I got it for to like carry around with me if I need to like going around the yard and I got like these little bitty saplings or something I need to just cut down real quick and just cut that off. I also have a Holzbruch hatchet that's hand forged and everything. That thing is amazing, but it's a hatchet. I don't really
did you say
Holzbruch?
All right, that's a word I can't say.
And so I really like that. Now I did look at the Holzbruch. I just love saying it. They don't really. I don't like their splitting mauls and stuff. I just don't. That doesn't apply. But anyway, so I just thought I'd mention that. Like people need to understand. Like research is cool, but not everybody who's saying stuff on the internet or on YouTube is really gonna have the same vibe or be able to talk to you in a manner of which you're needed to be talked to.
It's not gonna communicate the same thing to you.
Yeah, I mean, it's different. It is a lot of perspective, especially with axes. Now, you can get into the conversation with axes about like the metal they use, the hardness of it, like the different angles of the chamfers and all this stuff. You can talk about all that, you know, and that'd be legit. But
and for the non-avid axe listener, what is a chamfer?
Don't worry about it, man. I mean, it doesn't matter. I don't want to talk about this forever anyway. But
I know. Anyway, I went back to the old weighted vest hikes today.
How was that for you, Brian?
Buddy, it is very cleansing to go out into nature, put on a 60-pound, 50-pound weighted vest, and just start hiking. I mean, I went, I think at the end of it, I had hiked almost just shy of 5 miles. It felt great, man. It feels just good to had a nice podcast in the ears while I was hiking, man. I was listening to the Tucker Carlson, Ben Carson podcast. Very good. Ben Carson's story is very, I love his story. I love the fact that he's a faith-based, you know, biblical man who's working. It's nice to see someone within our government that's actually biblical and faith-based and wants to talk about it. Right. Like that's the mainstay of his life. Right. And his story with his mom and everything that he went through as a kid, absolutely a phenomenal story to hear. So, but at the end of the day, I took a 5 mile hike in the woods. I just feel like there's something about being out and, you know, in God's country and just looking at the trees and
we talked about like in our depression anxiety episode, yeah. Just how important that is. I mean, to get out and just be in nature for a minute, just kind of can reset some things. I mean, it's his creation for a reason, dude, you know? But so I guess everybody, I don't know if they've been catching and we're not going to get into this really a whole lot, yeah. But the more information that comes out about the attempted assassination of the former President Trump is it just keeps coming out and being more and more of a just a circus. And, you know, I just feel like you could point the finger all kinds of places right now and then be probably pretty close.
Well, here's basically what you saw in a nutshell. Help, I'm in a nutshell. No, I'm just kidding. They swerved the democratic process. Completely swerved it. Like 14.5 million people showed up and voted for Biden to be president. It was obvious in that garbage speech he gave last night that he did not want to lay down his sword. He did not want to lay down his sword. He did not want to not run. But the powers that be came in and said, hey, bro, you either quit or we're going to force you out. And then they basically coronated one of the most ill-spoken, poor representations of political government. And they basically just coronated her the queen and sent her out into the world to become president, which I find to really just be insulting to my intelligence, right? Like we were just going to go, oh, great. They picked her. No, she didn't do the work. None of it. She didn't campaign. She didn't go earn the votes. She literally was just handed the baton without. And what's crazy is the media, the liberal media that was destroying her 30 days ago is now all of a sudden touting her to be the next great president of the United States. And I just can't reconcile any of it.
Yeah. So. I just find it's amusing. And I think there's plans within plans. And I think that this is one of those where I just, I'm waiting for the shoe to drop.
Honestly, man, at first I almost was amused. And at the end, I'm kind of insulted really that they thought as a person who is capable of having, you know, cohesive thought and using my brain that I would just not see that happen. Like they were just going to be like, woo.
But I'm really interested in to know like, well, not interested. I'm really irritated, I should say, at the general public for like, I just feel like they are allowing this rhetoric and this propaganda stuff to just be true. Like, I don't understand. I, I can't fathom, and I know the people on the other side would say the same thing about me, but like, I cannot fathom why you would agree or be in favor of this kind of stuff, you know? And they are. And it's just mind-boggling to me.
Well, dude, Here's the thing. To a slew of, it goes back to what I said last week. It's extraordinarily easy to be a liberal because it's extraordinarily easy to just go, everything's okay. You can do whatever, man. It's okay. We're good. We're all good with it. And it's also part of that same generation that thinks that way, that they just drink the Kool-Aid, man. They just drink the Kool-Aid. Like, hey, free healthcare. She's giving me free healthcare. I drink the Kool-Aid. Nothing's free, man. Somebody's going to pay for it, right? It is a literal pandemic. It's a pandemic of ignorance is what it is. It's a pandemic of ignorance and it's spreading like wildfire. I cannot honestly wrap my mind around people that just hear something and go, no, sure, that's the truth. Monkeys have wings. We're good.
So that's what. So the other part about that, though, is it's just like we've gotten to this point where there's such a distrust of the media and the government that it's like anything goes.
Amen, brother. Amen.
That's a really pathetic and low place to be, dude. It's just it's stupid.
It's not even a bar. They've taken the bar away.
That's what I mean.
Just crawl on your belly, man. That's what it is.
And I'm not even talking exclusively on the liberal side of the things either. I mean,
well, Fox News is just as bad.
But I don't even think they're even. See, that's here. Okay, I don't watch any of them. Let me just make that clear. I do not watch any of them. NBC, ABC, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. I don't watch none of them. None of them. So what I'll find is I'll look around. If I see something on one of the influencers I watch on YouTube or Instagram or something, they'll say something about a story. Then I'll just go searching through it a non-propaganda search engine. Not Google. Don't do it on Google. They'll filter your results.
DuckDuckGo.
I use DuckDuckGo a lot. A couple other things. But anyway, so I go through there and I'll research that. And maybe one of those will include a CNN article or an AP article or something, but that'll only be one thing I check out.
Yeah, for sure.
Now we'll go over this in an upcoming episode more. The we're going to do an episode on propaganda.
Yeah, I can't wait because right now the propaganda machine is on fire.
So, but I think today, okay.
We got so wrapped up in the Trump assassination that we forgot to do the actual subject that we were supposed to do.
I forgot. It was like a choice. We were like an hour in. I'm like, okay, look.
Yeah, we're burnt.
Yeah. So we did it. We did the episode on depression and anxiety, which is very much a needed thing for especially men's mental health.
Yep.
A part kind of something that's associated with depression a lot is grief.
Absolutely.
And so I think it's good to maybe spend some time on grief. On that note, though, 1 minute.
Oh, hold your mic. Do you got to make a wee wee?
No.
Okay.
All right. Why is that not?
Reggie. I would say that in society right now, the word grief always carries a negative connotation in most conversations. Would you agree?
Yeah. I would say so. I would say it's definitely I don't know. I guess I'd be like 50-50 on that.
Okay.
Because I think people understand there is an understanding of like some people who think grief is a necessity.
Grief is a necessity. Grief is not unnatural, right? Like a lot of people are like, I don't want to have grief. No, it's natural to grieve a loss. Short term, long term, it's natural to grieve a loss. Right? It's not something that you should be leery of, and it's not an emotion that's untenable. It's actually something that we as human beings are built to go through.
I would say that for the first thing first, okay, the American Psychology Association, they qualify grief as the anguish experienced after significant loss, usually the death of a beloved person. Grief also often includes physiological distress, separation anxiety, confusion, yearning, obsessive dwelling on the past, and apprehension about the future. Intense grief can become life-threatening through disruption of the immune system, self-neglect, and suicidal thoughts. Grief may also take the form of regret for something lost, remorse for something done, or sorrow for a mishap to oneself. So there's a lot in that definition, but I thought it was appropriate there for is. Like the
that covers a lot of it, but I don't think it covers all of it.
Okay. Tell me another aspect of grief.
You can grieve. One of the things you grieve the loss of someone that's still alive. You know, there's other aspects of grief. We grieve the loss of jobs, the loss of friends. Doesn't mean that they passed, but relationships can take bad turns, things like that. So I think if we're looking at grief as like a, if you're looking at for like that concrete grief definition, I think that's very close. But I think what that overlooks is, you know, you can grieve. I mean, there are people that grieve the fact that the McRib leaves McDonald's. I mean, people can grieve over anything. But, you know, and I speak by experience, you know, my mother is still alive, but I've grieved the loss of her already. So it's one of those things where, you know, you have to really kind of, I think you quantify it more by the situation than you do with just a flat definition, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, I would agree to that. So in your lifespan, your experience, Brian, how have you experienced grief in your life? You already mentioned your, like, you know, relationship with your mom and stuff, but
I would say probably the two hardest moments of grief that I've ever experienced were the death of my grandmother and the death of my uncle Kenneth. The death of my grandmother, the grief was a little different. She had been sick for a lot of years. She had been fighting COPD and lung cancer and emphysema, and she fought like a warrior for like 7 years, just battling back and forth, right? So by the time she passed, it was very sad, but there was also a sense of relief in the sense that, I mean, she suffered every day, and the suffering was over. I did grieve her. I did grieve the loss of her. She was in the truest version of matriarch of a family, right? Like, she was the biblical version of a matriarch. She was loving, she was kind. She, there was never anything I could say to her that she would look at me and go, you should be ashamed of yourself. Always willing to have a conversation. My Uncle Kenny on the other side, I loved him dearly. Growing up, my dad wasn't in the picture when I was younger. So he kind of took a father type role with me. Mm-hmm. And the loss was sudden. I got a call in the middle of the day that he was gone. And I still remember I was honestly like, you gotta be kidding, right? Like, this is a joke. This isn't a real thing. And I was I unhealthily grieved him for a very long time. Now, I came out of it eventually. But you know, I've experienced healthy grief and unhealthy grief. I've experienced all the stages of grief, anger, acceptance, you know, bargaining, all those things. But yeah, I mean, those are my main experiences with grief. Now, I've lost relationships and churches, and, you know, I grieved over Encounter a little bit because I had really, you know, the separation from Encounter was tough just because that's kind of where I found my way back into the faith. But yeah, that would be my basic experiences with grief overall. Mm. Right.
I I would say like the most difficult part of grief in my experience is just, and it depends on the situation. So let's say a beloved person to you dies. I mean, for me, the tough part, and I'll say this, the tough part's changed over the years.
Yes.
So when I was younger, just the immediacy of it and the, I mean, just even under, like even just the comprehension of what has transpired is a really difficult thing to even just grasp that.
Yeah.
When you're kind of younger. And I mean, yeah. And I mean, I think even like nowadays, it's not so much that, cause you know, after dealing with a lot of it, you kind of get to understand, okay, this is part of life. It's all that kind of stuff. But it really, it comes down to the, for me, it's just like where figuring out, like if there's a, what you do now, if it's somebody really close, what that can mean different things. Here's one example. Like when my dad passed away a couple of years ago, it wasn't that we knew he was sick, man. It was just one of those things. And, so it wasn't like an unexpected death, but it was like when he died, then I'm now the generation. I'm now the oldest of my generation.
You're now the patriarch.
Right. And it's like, well, when I went to his funeral, I kept thinking of Jordan Peterson's words, be the strongest man at your father's funeral. And it was hard for me to, at that moment, I'm sitting there in the funeral. So it was hard for me to even think that. Right. And, yeah. And you'd think like a tough guy, you know, all that kind of stuff, but it was just sitting there listening to my people talk about him and stuff. And it's hard, dude.
I remember when you told me, it almost caught me because when you told me, you were like, my dad's gone. And I sort of waited for a second to see what was coming behind it. And for the first time in a long time, once it happens, no. How do you, you know, at that point, you're literally, the shutters are shut on an aspect of your life that even though you may have known it was coming, you weren't prepared for.
Oh yeah.
And then, I mean, you're to credit to your dad, the lore of your dad has just blossomed, dude. Your dad was such a great dude to me and was so interesting and engaging when we were around and so funny. Like he was quintessentially just the quintessential old guy, right? Like he had tons of life experience. He didn't mind talking about it. And then to find out that he might be one of the most brilliant musicians I've ever heard in my life. On top of that, I was like, what is happening? I was like, that was well after. And then you play those songs for me. And I'm like, I wanted him back because I wanted to be like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah, I know.
How are you not like in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
I know. It's crazy. But anyway, so the you know, it's the immediacy of it is different than when you go. And I mean, even like grief doesn't, when you're with this, something like your mother or father and that you were close to, it's like you may accept that and move, and you're able to like operate on a day-to-day basis, and that's fine. But there's times when a month ago, I was doing something I thought of my dad, and it was like choked me up for a minute, you know? Yeah. My mom died when I was 18, I was a second semester in University of Louisville, and that was sudden. Like there was there was a car accident.
Yeah.
Poof, done.
Done.
Also, that was I mean, my that for first off, that's one of the few, like, that was my first real experience with losing someone really close.
Yeah.
And being 18 and, like, you know, your mother's been your rock for, like, the whole time you've been growing up.
Yep.
It was that was so monumental to the course of my life was going to go, of that one instance changed everything. And it's interesting that even when I came into the, you know, you come into this sterile hospital room and, you know, my dad was there and he was like, "Hey, we lost her. And you don't even know what to say.
Like, yeah.
It's just like, I was just sitting there and I remember saying, well, what do I hear, like, the people on TV and stuff say? So I'm like, I just said why and all this, but I really wasn't thinking that. It was just because I didn't know, I've had nothing.
You're running on instinct at that point.
It was just right. What the hell, you know? And then, you know, that was a very angry and tumultuous period of my time. And it took a couple of years, man.
Yeah.
For that to kind of iron out.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I think those are the hardest.
Yeah.
When it's just poof, they're gone. My brother, Chris, we were driving to visit my dad and I had just talked to Chris 2 days before, was looking forward to seeing Chris. And my stepmother calls my wife and just keeps screaming that he's gone. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like I just spoke to him, like, and Julie's looking at me and I'm trying to drive and wrap my head around what's happening. And so I drive to my dad's like 150 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And when we get to Ephraim McDowell and I walk in and I see Chris there and I'm like, wait a minute, bro. Like, I just spoke to you. Like, you were doing great. You were talking about all the things that you had planned and then lights out, man. And that's one of those things where what do you say at that point? What do you, you know, what conversation am I going to have with you that's going to make any sense?
Right.
Right.
It's not going to happen. And I'll say that those extreme cases like that, dude, are, it is different for everybody. I think it's part of one of there are stages of grief and there's all this stuff, but everybody deals with it differently. And I think as a man, and we talk about being a biblical man, this is one of those times where it's really okay for you to, like, be vulnerable.
Yeah. And the thing is guys, for all of you out there, I cried when my grandmother died. I cried when my uncle died. I cried when my brother died. It's okay. One of the myths I'd like to dispel while we're talking about this is that men are not emotional. Men have deep, complex emotions. We are just trained through our life to deal with them in a way where we're not overt about it. You know, one of the greatest quotes I ever heard was, you know, love while you can, because you don't want the first time you tell somebody you love them to be while you're standing over their coffin. Right. I tell my kids and my wife, I love them every day. It's not a sappy thing, but when I leave this place, whether that's tomorrow morning or 30 or 40 years from now, the one thing I want my kids and my wife to know is that regardless of how stoic I may have been, regardless of who I had to be or what I had to go through to keep them safe and secure, that at the end of the day, it was because I loved them. Right? It wasn't ever because I felt some kind of, you know, overarching obligation as a man. I do feel that obligation, but that doesn't have anything to do with how I feel about my wife and my children. Right? So.
Yeah, I would say that. Correct. And the Psychology Today says the misperception that more grief is better or that there's a proper way to grieve can make the process more difficult.
Yeah.
So when you talk about guys and men, like, actually, like, it's okay to deal with it your way and your time.
Yeah, for sure.
It's okay to cry at those times. I mean, like, you know, if anybody calls you a pansy or something like that when you're in the moment of grief, that I think they're just so insecure with themselves they don't know what to do.
Well, my Uncle Kenny's brother, I was crying at his funeral, and he walks up to me and goes, "Stop it." And Dave, if you're listening, I'm not upset. But as I was driving home that night after the funeral, I realized that's how my grandfather raised us. And it was to be, I'll call it uber stoic, right? But I just couldn't.
That's okay.
Right? And I understood, like, I could have gotten angry, but I didn't. I understood that he was only doing what he was taught to do. And it made me, in a way, a little heartbroken for him that whatever he was feeling, he was holding in, right? Like, dude, it's unhealthy to hold in.
Yeah, that's where you get into trouble.
Yeah, that's where you start doing weird, crazy things.
Yeah, I mean, like, you hold it in, and then you'll go on an alcoholic binge or something to, like, deal with it. That's actually making your grief worse. Just to psychiatrically speaking, that's what the experts will tell you, that'll make it worse.
Well, and the worst thing you can do with grief is mask it.
Yeah, that's
right.
Yeah,
you know, don't mask your grief. Talk about it. Right. Talk about it. People listen.
The Psychology Today makes a really good point. That they suggest that in order to support a friend or a loved one, you got to follow their lead as far as, like, how they want to deal with it. Right. So, cause I know that there's periods of time when I was in grief of some sort, I really wanted to just be by myself. I just didn't want to talk to anybody. I didn't want to be nothing. I just needed some alone, solitary time.
You just needed to focus on something else.
Well, no, I mean, really,
or focus on what you were going to do to deal with it.
Yeah. I mean, it's just,
right?
Or just focus on the actual, just what's going on. The stuff. Sometimes you just need time to just chill and, like, be solitary and to just make, like, you let your brain work through all this stuff, man.
Breathe, man.
And then there's other times, dude, where you really need to talk, where you really need to do something. Like, you know, I know there's parts of many times where I really needed to get out and do something. Right. And thankfully I've had friends along the way who are like, yeah, let's go. And it was just, you know, we go do something, watch a movie, or go out to do a bar or something or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, for me, like, and just as here's the scope of this, right? My mother dies when I was 18. Then 10 months later, one of my aunt dies. And it's like 2 years later, another aunt dies. Then, you know, my grandfather died, you know, and then my aunt dies. Then my grandmother dies. And then my dad passes away. So there's been all these people that were really, I was really close to. My granddad was a huge inspiration in my life. And when he was in his 80s.
Yes.
So when he goes, it's different than when my, you know, 45 year old mother dies suddenly. It's different than when my, you know, 50 year old aunt dies suddenly. You know, all those things.
It is.
Now, my one aunt she had cancer and all kinds of things. And so she was just in an assisted facility and just on pain medication and all that stuff. And then, you know, so it was like, just, it was going to, you knew it was going to happen.
Yeah.
But see, on that one, I tried to, here's why I bring this up. I tried to hold it in. I tried to. I went back to work the next day. And keep in mind, I was raised by these four women, my mom and my three aunts. They didn't have kids. We were their kids.
Yeah.
So they were like, it was like a second mom to me. And then I tried because I was like, no, I just didn't want to deal with it. Like, I was tired of being in grief, to be fair here. Just tired of it. I didn't want to grieve anymore. Just didn't want to experience it. So I tried to. And then I remember one day at work, I was like, I said, man, I got to go. And I couldn't, it was not going to, it was not going to happen. I had to go. And I did. It busted out. Yeah. It was just like a freaking dam that broke.
Yep.
But, you know, there's as you get older and you experience grief more and more, you learn what it is. You learn what you need to do in order to fix it. But it is different for each occasion. I would say that when your pet dies, there's a different kind of grief there than when your parent dies. There's a different kind of grief when you lose your job. There's a different kind of grief when, I don't know, all kinds of things, man. And they're different levels. So, and one of the things that I think everybody's at this point probably aware of the stages of grief.
Yeah.
But, I think according to what I've read online and stuff is that you don't necessarily go through all of them.
No, you can go through, from what I've read, there are people that go through two, there are people that go through all five. There's people that, but you know, I think the most important part when you're grieving, and I know this is a difficult thing to say, is there's some things that you can do during that grieving process to help yourself. And one of them is accept the feelings, right? Like what you're feeling is completely natural. You should hurt. You should be sad. You should long for their presence. You should have those feelings for someone you've lost. It's a real thing, right? And look, I'm as masculine and alpha as the next guy, but I feel when I have loss, I feel. So the best way for me personally to deal with them, and from experience, because with my uncle, I didn't deal with them at all. I shut down. I didn't take care of myself. I drove my attention into work. I completely got lost in it. Right. And then the other one is give yourself time, right? The grieving process takes a different distance for everybody. Right. I guess it's possible that somebody gets over it in a day. Some people take weeks. Some people take months. Some people might grieve for a year. As long as the grief doesn't cross the line into the boundaries of unhealthy, it's okay to work your way through it in your own time frame. Right. I think those are two really important ones. But the third one that I've really kind of learned more about is taking care of yourself while you're grieving. Eat right, exercise, sleep more, you know, let your body rest. Let yourself heal, right? Because really getting over grief is healing, right? And it makes it far more difficult when you're not eating well, you're not sleeping well, and you're not moving around. A lot of people are very sullen. Yeah. They want to sit stationary. And I was like, so I would say that those three aspects of it, if you can see clearly enough to begin to implement those things, I think that grieving process will be, I don't want to use the word better because it's not really an appropriate word, but I guess it is the only word I can use, is it'll make the process better for you, right?
I would say that this William Smith article I'll post down here gives a really good explanation about the stages, and I think it's worth noting. But before I go there, he talks about something called grief work.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it assumes that an individual will not be able to overcome their grief unless they actively try to let go of what was lost. Once they do this, they can take the energy that was invested into despair and use it constructively to adapt to any changes that have happened because of the loss.
Yes.
So what he's talking about, the first task is to accept that the loss has actually occurred and move past any attempt at denial.
Yeah.
The second task is to allow the pain of grief to be experienced without attempting to suppress or redirect the pain elsewhere.
Yes.
The third task is to accept that life no longer features whatever was lost to begin to adapt to this new life. The final task is to take the energy that was invested into the relationship that was lost and reinvest it into a newer existing relationship. I actually like that one.
That last one's a solid, yeah. Solid call.
And he also talked about what's a grief curve. And I think that's an interesting way to like visualize it. But like you have the, if you have a U shape, right? You have the, it's a reputation of, you have the high morale and energy to low morale and hopelessness. And then back to high morale and energy. So the high point at the beginning of the curve is characterized by the almost manic energy of denial, shock, and anger.
Yeah.
So it's a really high point of just all of these intense emotions, right? And then a low point is actually where you have that despair and depression, which different people experience that differently, right? The curve doesn't have to look like this. It could really just look, you know, depends on the person. And then the high point at the end is when you're like, you've really kind of worked it out. Your energy is kind of back and restored.
They would kind of call it the acceptance
stage. Yeah, you're kind of moving on from acceptance. So, and again, I think this is what people need to realize is that grief looks different for different people.
Yeah.
What I would say, if you have a loved one or a friend or something you're close to, and they go through something, just make sure you're like attentive
and available.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
absolutely.
Don't be that schmuck who like just says, "Oh, they'll take care of it."
Yeah,
it doesn't matter how tough you are.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
Because remember, if the depression can be a part of grief,
yes,
and that can actually be where clinically that turns into unhealthy grief.
Yeah,
because that depression can spin out of control if there's not a support system that's there. So I'd really, and we talked about depression, how bad that is. And even, it doesn't matter if you're, you know, if you're a guy who deals with depression already or not. Matter of fact, it probably, if you are one who has depression problems, this is a very, very important step for people to understand that.
Yes. Yes.
They really need to, you know, be attentive and be available. You're right.
Well, one of the things I too, cause everybody knows I speak from the biblical aspects. You know, grief can actually be a good thing in the sense of your faith. I mean, grief can help people know God, right? Like Psalm 34:18 says that God is close to those who are brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. God can comfort people with promises from his word and with peace that passes all understanding, right? So, you know, focus on, you know, make sure that you retain your prayer life. Right. Make sure that you're going to that altar and saying, you know, God, some of this I might not be able to handle on my own. Right. This goes back to God not giving us more than we can handle. That's a crock. You know, mm-hmm. I've been in situations where I'm not dog paddling, man. I'm doing the best I can to get the crown of my head above water.
Yeah, right? It's totally true.
And grief can help people understand sin too. I mean, it's, you know, grief can help people understand the effects of sin in the world. Psalm 51:3-4 says that grief can be good when it's over sin. Like if you're like, you know, let's say you had a tumultuous relationship and it was a very, and that relationship ends, you will miss that person. You will grieve the loss of that relationship, but you also may take that opportunity to look at that relationship and be like, that relationship was irreparably broken. And it's a good thing that that kind of sinful anger, lust kind of brouhaha that you get into is gone. Right. So I think and because I speak from the aspect of a man, I think men need grief in a way, because it measures against the heightened masculinity that we have, right? Like our masculine is to always be available for others and upbeat and solve problems. Just because you're good at being a problem solver doesn't mean you're not going to have problems, right? And you lose someone, that's a problem for you. Especially someone who was a pillar in your life, whether that's a friend, a parent, a grandparent, brother, sister, whatever it might be. You know, but also, you know, one of the things that I will tell you to be careful of, and this is something that I was guilty of with my grandmother, was I would go, even while she was alive, I would go into these bouts of real anger. Like, this woman has been the glue that held our family together. Why are you letting this happen? Why is she suffering? That's a dangerous area to go into, because those are the times that you really want to, pour into that person, right? Because they're going through something. The last thing they need is for you to be angry and waste the last moments that you have, right? One of the things I really remember about you and your dad's relationship was, you know, I asked you, I was like, well, why did you let your dad move in? And you were like, because I wanted the girls to know him and I wanted them to know the kind of man he was. And because you did that, you got to see an aspect of him in those days you spent with him that most people normally don't get to see. Because most people wait until the problem's too intense or it's too late, right? You took advantage of that opportunity to draw closer to him and involve him in your family and do the things that you did, which I thought was really cool. Like, I thought that was, you know, a lot of people would be like, dude, you gonna move your dad in with you? And I was like, dude, I mean, I was like, that's his dad, right? That's your dad. My wife and I have talked about my dad and we would have absolutely no problem.
Dude, I have zero regrets about that. Like, I mean, even though he got like this was his room that we're in right now. Yeah. You know, we moved everything around. Like, it was horribly inconvenient to like move. It was just, man, it was really bad. I mean, because at the time, my girls were not. It was still like, I don't know, early on, not toddler. Well,
no, they weren't infants.
Maybe toddler. I don't know.
I think one of them was toddler.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And so this was their room here so that they could play and stuff and be like right here on the main floor. My wife was having health issues.
Yeah.
It made sense. And upstairs was used for, my office and Joey's room was up there. So we moved everything around, you know, we my office got moved down to a basement that not finished, you know, but it was like, no, my dad needs a place. This has to happen. Moved that down there, moved my daughters upstairs, you know, even though we knew it was going to be, you know, hard to, for my wife to get up and down. If I had to work, I'd have to go come up from the basement and go up there. You know, there's all kinds of things, but it was like, no, that's my dad. And we're going to, you know,
you're going to make it work.
Yeah. We're going to make whatever we need to make. And it wasn't just that. I knew that my dad was like one of those guys. Like if he felt like he was putting us out, he wouldn't have come. If like he thought that things weren't quite the way it should be, or something he didn't like, he would get like grumbly and want to leave and all this stuff. And so we really made an effort to put a lot of effort into it. I got him a big old TV in here.
But one of the things too was, I mean, one of the things in that situation and, you know, again, my grandmother went through this as she got sick. You're losing your freedoms, man. You're depending on other people when you're not used to doing that.
Yeah.
So that can cause a little bit of grumpy, right? Like, I was taking care of myself and now I can't.
Well, he was taking care of my grandmother.
Yeah.
And it just got to the point. It was like, dude, neither of y'all can take care of yourselves or each other.
Yeah.
This ain't working.
Yeah.
This is not working. So we had to make some changes and stuff. And it, I mean, look, my girls, they would come in here and watch, my dad loved like King Kong movies and Godzilla stuff. So, and my littlest one, Raina, she loved watching the movies with grandpa, you know?
Yeah.
And we went to the Ark together and we did a bunch of stuff together, man. Yeah. You know? So it was definitely worth it, but it's, you have to make that choice, dude. Like, you know, and it should be an easier choice than what sometimes it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I think our selfish nature sometimes interferes with the common sense of the moves we need to make. Right. Like it's very much a, It's very difficult, even if you're willing, right? It's even if you're willing to take on that task, it can become difficult. And I've always, like I said, I've always admired the fact that, you know, I've always looked at your and Julie's marriage and been like, cool. They're really in it for each other. But when your dad moved in and the girls were here and Joey was here and you, the only thing I could think is how cool is it that your dad gets to watch his granddaughters grow up, right? Mm-hmm. However long that might have been. One of my major regrets is my grandmother never met my kids.
Right.
Right. So
right.
The fact that it was so cool that they got to know their grandfather in that way. And my grandfather is still alive, but unfortunately our relationship is not great. I mean, my oldest son is his namesake. But unfortunately he's a very unnecessarily unhappy man. And that causes behaviors that we really can't, that I've had to shield my family from.
Right.
And I really do hate it because honestly, as tumultuous as it was when I was growing up and as much as he was a drinker and all the things that we kind of had to kind of maneuver around as I was growing up, I mean, if it wasn't for him, I don't know where I would be because my mother wasn't doing the job.
Yeah.
And it was kind of him and my grandmother that rode into the rescue, right? All the things that my parents would have done for me as a young man, my grandparents did. So, but another thing I would say too, and this goes back to a lot of things that we've talked about. If you feel like your grief is consuming your life, you need to seek help. Listen, man, the devil will look for any window to get in, right? And take you down.
Especially if you've dealt with an addiction.
Yeah. That, or if the relationship was in some way unhealthy to begin with.
Yeah. That can really cause some really twisted.
So stuff. if you start to feel like your grief is consuming you, in a way where it's drawing your, for lack of a better term, the life energy away from you, reach out, man. You know, go find a friend, find a loved one, go to a church, ask to counsel with someone. You've got to get yourself in a position where you're able to overcome those feelings without making poor decisions. So reach out. If you feel like the grief that you're in is taking control of your life, please reach out
to somebody. I mean, like, yeah. Like there's nothing, and there's nothing wrong with seeing a therapist or something.
Yeah.
There are many grief counseling groups.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, I've done several things over the years to see if it would help her. And it wasn't even that I felt like it was out of control. I was just like, well, maybe it'll help. I don't care. It's like, so yeah, I mean, just don't, it's not an unmanly thing to do. Yeah, I'll say that.
It's not.
Now, biblically speaking though, I think we have to, grief takes on a different perspective. I would say, mm-hmm. because you know, when we're, if you believe that we are in the world, but we're not of it.
Yeah.
When we die, we go home.
Yeah.
That's a whole different perspective than just nothingness. Right. I mean, or the other religious kind of ideals. So it becomes almost a celebration of them going home.
Yeah.
Now it doesn't make the loss any less. Well, it kind of does. I'll be honest. It kind of does make
it. I don't think it makes the loss less. I think it gives the loss purpose.
Okay. There you go. Maybe that's a better way to put it.
Right.
And I mean, that's a different thing, dude. I mean, even when my dad, it was like, I knew he was going home. It was like, you know, that really helped the process of that. He wasn't feeling any more pain anymore. He wasn't having trouble with his memory anymore. Well, hey, look, he's home. Cool. Yeah.
He's getting what he needs.
Yeah. I mean,
right.
You know, and I think the most important part is like to understand that I look at the passage where in John, where Jesus and Lazarus,
Yeah, Jesus grieved the loss of his friend Lazarus.
Yeah, Jesus wept.
Yeah. You know, that's if that's not a sign that grief is healthy, the Son of God wept over the loss of his friend Lazarus. He grieved the loss of his friend Lazarus.
And then brought him back.
And then he brought him back to life. But still, he grieved.
Yeah, right? I mean, he did. And I think that's a key thing for us to remember as men. Mm-hmm. Like the ultimate man himself wept for mm-hmm. his friend.
You know?
I mean, he come on now. That's what, that's the, if he can do it, then obviously that's a thing you can do too. You know? Now, I wouldn't say raising people from the dead is something you can do, but I digress.
Jesus went through, and not a lot of people think about this, but when Christ asked his father to take this burden away from him, he was bargaining. Right? He was, you know, he was grieving what was going to happen. And he was scared.
I don't think so intently that he was bleeding out his sweat glands.
Yeah. So he was in the bargaining stage of that situation where he was asking his father to take it away from him. Right. So, you know, you got to realize that, you know, there's, you know, Abraham began to grieve the moment that he was asked to sacrifice his son. You know, grief is not. I would be honest and tell you that if we could go back to Adam and Eve after they were expelled from the garden, there was probably some grief that went on there. They were in paradise, right? They were living in paradise, and they were, because of their own ignorant act, they were expelled from the garden, right? So guess what? They probably grieved the loss of that perfection, right?
Think about and we talked about this too, the disciples after Jesus died on the cross. The Bible talks about that, but I can't imagine this person that's been your mentor, your teacher, really close to for 3 years now, 2 years, depending on which apostle you are. And you've been betrayed by one of your own who you called a brother. You've watched your mentor be like brutally tortured and die on a cross the most heinous way possible. I mean, you can imagine the grief at that point, and it tells them how heavy their heart was, but like, it's not just about Jesus dying. There's like this whole stage of life and this whole aspect that is like doubts and all, I'm sure all of that was just, I couldn't even imagine that.
You know? I would gamble that the grief Judas had for betraying Christ was what drove him to hang himself.
Well, see, and there you have a grief that was not healthy.
Yeah.
Right? Because you have a grief that of guilt and shame drove him to a state of probably depression and despair so much that he
killed now, himself.
I mean, whether or not I don't know. I couldn't even imagine being in that situation for one. So it's hard to even in wrap my mind around that scenario and say like, well, where were the other disciples and why didn't they, you know, help Judas? Well, they were probably really mad.
Yeah. And they probably were kind of focusing on the fact that Christ was being tortured. And
yeah, I mean, it's just,
you know, and also let's not forget that one of the things, and I think this kind of draws a line, we've all violated someone's trust at one point or another, whether it being intentional or not. That brings on grief because the guilt from that causes you to grieve the damage you did.
Yeah.
Imagine betraying the Son of God, like to the level of grief that I would feel from that, I can't even begin to kind of, there's not even a layer I can dig to.
No.
Right. So, you know, there's a lot of grief. I mean, I would say even Solomon and David grieved in their stories. You know, there's just, you know, it's, I think what that's stating is this, that it's part of the cycle of your life. Grief is part of the cycle of your life.
Another one that I thought of after we talked was Samson.
Yes.
When his hair was cut.
Yes.
there was some grief that happened for him during that part. Mm-hmm. And the only way he really pulled out of that was to, he reached out to God himself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now he ended up, you know, he died in his last heroic event that he did, but still, you know, he pulled himself out of it enough to act in a heroic, brave manner. Yeah, right.
For sure.
So even that, he had to kind of go through a little bit of that stage of grief about losing his hair and changing who he, you know, all this stuff. So that, I mean, that man, that must have been difficult, too. Right. I know that, you know, like when an athlete, when their career is done, that's got to be a grieving moment, right?
It's got to be difficult. Yep.
Yeah. An injury that changes someone's like whole mobility and everything. Boy, that's got to be a grieving moment. So getting back to the Christian perspective, though, I think that the one thing I always point to is like the change in the disciples when Jesus comes back and he's in their presence and so the way they are portrayed before his resurrection and in their midst teaching them again for briefly while he was there.
Yeah.
And afterwards is night and day.
Yes, it is.
You know, agreed. You got this, all this inquisitive stuff and kind of this timidity before, while Christ is teaching them and everything. And boy, I don't know. Christ must've had some, he has to have some divine patience in order to deal with some of that stuff. But here he is and he comes back, he defeats death. And then the disciples at that point are just so solidified in what Christ taught them and everything else that it's just an unwavering faith. And even when Peter was being martyred, he said, no, you can't, I don't want to be crucified like Jesus. No, you got to turn me up, do something else. Cause don't do that. And they crucified him upside down.
Yeah.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah.
So
Christ on the cross, why have you forsaken me? A moment of grief. Right. I mean,
I guess what the big point that I think both of us would make here is that it's a natural thing.
Absolutely.
It's a healthy thing. And really, this is one of those times where your brother or sister in Christ has really got to be attentive and really just like understand you're going to deal with it your own way. And to just be attentive to how you navigate through it and be there for them.
Yeah. And be there in love too, right? Like the last thing a grieving person wants to hear is snap out of it, man. Like,
yeah. Okay. So, to that point, don't be that guy who sits there and goes, man, come on now, dude. It's been like a month. Let's go. Don't be that guy.
Yeah.
Don't. That's not healthy.
That guy is what we like to refer to as a douchebag.
But also, too, it can take a long time. But if you're really attentive,
yeah,
and you're a trusted advisor to the person who's grieving, hopefully by that you've had enough communication to know whether it's healthy or not. And at the same token, encourage that person who's grieving. Like if you have a question about whether it's too long or whatever, encourage them to go see somebody, a professional.
Look at it this way. When you have someone in front of you that's grieving, it is a chance for you to practice service.
Oh yeah. Servitude is there, man.
You know, be of service to them, bring them meals, you know, make sure they've got food, make sure that they're, you know,
one big thing, the meal trains. Dude, do not diss those. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And look, you don't have to fix fancy stuff.
Yeah. Bring them a bucket of chicken, man.
Dude, I'm telling you, like you would be amazed how much that takes off. Like, especially like if it's someone who
has lost a spouse
or a breadwinner or the person who, like, if somebody lost their wife who prepares the meals and they don't know, like another guy doesn't know what he's doing. They got kids. Yeah. Come on, man. It's like, that's the best opportunity to like step in and like, just, cause I know that there's been several times where I've been extremely disappointed in the body of Christ because of, like, there's been somebody with a loss or a problem. And it could even be, speaking of grief, could be that your spouse is having, like, they're not there anymore. They're at the hospital.
Yeah.
And you kind of grieve that whole Now it's different. I'll say this because I've been through it myself. It's different because you're so focused on like trying to get stuff done, but there's still a point there. Like it makes such an impact though if they don't have to worry about that one thing.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing too is, you know, and this is really what frustrates me more than anything about being in churches and watching something like this go down. I've seen so many ministers stand up in front of congregations and go, you know, so-and-so lost their wife. They could really use some help. That is a call to service. That is not a, well, if you could, no, that's a call to service, man. When you're inside the church and a fellow church body member is in pain and law and has loss and is struggling, that is a call to service. That is not, nobody wants to hear, well, you know, I don't want to bother them. They're going through so much. You're not going to go over there and here, dude, here's, hey, I brought you three pizzas. Eat pizza tonight. Don't worry about anything. Hey, man, here's a bucket of chicken. Hey, you know,
here's a tuna noodle casserole.
Yeah, here's a lasagna. Put this in the oven at 350 for 45 minutes and then you eat it.
When my wife was really in trouble for a while, there was a couple at church. Beautiful. They it's like every chance they got, they were bringing food over.
Yeah.
It was amazing. It was amazing to me because I got two young kids.
Yeah.
You know? And having that be prepared and stuff. And
was the first thing Julie and I thought of the last time she was in the hospital. Julie goes, what do you want me to do? I said, bring a meal. And she brought a meal. I was like, that's Reggie's got to take care of the girls. He's already got to do baths and bedtimes and, you know, schedules.
And a teenager at the time.
And yeah, you had a teenager. Just take him a meal and so that he doesn't, that to me would be more than if you showed up with a handful of cash.
But so this is what I think the West, this is one point I want to make about this stuff real quick. The modern Christian Western church tends to lean towards let's take an offering. When really that
it's a call to service.
Yeah. Like you're, if you just take like an hour and go like do the dishes for them, you know what I'm saying? Like go like help sort the lawn, do something.
All right. Let's be clear.
Wow.
You take an offering, right? Let's say you get $500 and you go over there. You still haven't solved the problem. Now I just have $500 and still no time to do the things I need to do. Right.
This is what I'm saying. Like focus on the tasks. Cause you got to understand like during some of these challenging times, money may not be the problem.
Yeah.
If they've been good with their finances and stuff, they're not thinking about money at all. They got the money to pay the bills and all that stuff.
And I'm not saying that money's a bad thing.
No.
Like if you have somebody in your congregation that's financially struggling and they take up an offer to help that person. Okay. You're servicing the problem, but if someone's grieving the loss of their wife and he's the main breadwinner, so the money's there, he's not worried about your money.
No, this just speaks from me directly telling people this. When I was in that situation and my wife was in the hospital for months, I did not care about money. I can order freaking food via money all day long.
Yeah.
But I don't want takeout all the time.
Yeah.
My it's not healthy for my kids and everything.
Yeah.
Once in a while, it's cool. I don't even want to think about it. I got so much other stuff to do with work and everything else.
Yeah.
Tasks.
Yeah.
The work, dude. And I've had some brilliant, wonderful, beautiful
people. Do a load of laundry, folks.
Come over and like just help clean up the house, help do some dishes, help do this. It was beautiful. But you got to understand that if there's some, what happened with me though, is that it was such a long-term thing. People, they fizzle out.
Yeah.
And that's where I think the church has really got to take a more active role in that situation. Well,
and this is where
here's what I'm saying. I should have like I should almost have had like a liaison at the church to like keep in touch with me about what I needed and stuff rather than just me trying to like reach out.
You know what the
stupid,
you know what the real name for your liaison at church should be? The minister.
You mean pastor?
Yeah, the pastor.
Yeah.
And I think that's another thing. Which we'll do a whole nother episode about that. I think the definition of pastor has been lost. I'm so tired of hearing, well, I don't really like doing sick calls, so I don't. I'm sorry. Did you make a deal with God before you became a pastor that you didn't have to take care of this section of the church? You're only going to take care of these sections that you thought were easy. Shut up. Go do what you're called to do. No, nobody who is called to ministry is only called to stand on stage and preach. Ministry has a spherical in encompassing definition. And when you decide that you're too good or you're too busy or you just don't wanna, you are neglecting a arm of your ministry, and that is probably one of the most important arms of your ministry.
Yeah, that needs to be.
But anyway, that's a whole different subject. I'm sorry.
So getting back to this, I would also say that if you have a young couple, and they have a death like that, or if somebody loses a child, dude, there's not enough.
Yeah,
you cannot do enough for that.
There's not enough that you can make happen.
No. There's not. You don't have to stick. So here's the thing. Again, do the wishes of what the family wants, but make an effort.
Yeah.
Okay. Like if they want you to come over and like sit and watch a show with them,
go.
Just be there. Just do it.
Just be present.
If they want to, if they need somebody to do some housework or something because they're, and they will, and they would appreciate it, some of them. Do it. If they need somebody to like give a meal, do it.
Yeah.
If they need somebody to cut your grass, do it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's like just be what is needed and don't be afraid. Just don't be afraid to, like, I'm not saying reach out every 5 minutes, but if you do a touch point every other day,
yeah,
you're not doing them a disservice.
You know,
I mean, come on. This is crazy. Like anything, grief is natural. Grief is healthy. It's our job as brothers and sisters of Christ to encourage and just be there
and lift up
and like, you know, just pour into the people that are going through something. It's just critical. And I really feel like we tend to just throw money at stuff.
Especially, or we tend to shy away because of our own reservations.
Or we think, oh, I'm too busy. And let me say this. Okay, let me say this on that point. If you're too busy to help people, you're too busy. If you can't help someone, you're too busy. Period.
Amen, brother.
You gotta allow time to be able to be a part of the community that you want to be in.
Yep.
You're not fulfilling your obligation to, and I'm not even talking about church.
Just the people in your
community. Just people in your community. Just the people. It could be your church too, but I'm just saying if I'm so busy, I don't have time to like help my neighbor with a down tree from a storm. I'm doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Just know that if somebody's going through something you can't help, understand that God doesn't ask you to give up what is the abundance. He asks you to give up everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Lay it down and follow him.
We're R&B Talks.
Like, subscribe, argue, point, counterpoint, steel man, straw man, whatever you want to do. I'm Brian.
I'm Reggie.
I'll see you later.
Bye-bye.